Hello and welcome to the Dr. Nyman Show. Today is Tuesday, March 7th, 2017. Dr. Nyman wanted to do an update on the latest situation regarding avian influenza. Dr. Nyman, the floor is yours.
Okay, Ryan, thanks. I thought we'd do a quick little update because there's two viruses that have been identified or clarified in the last the H5N6 was a couple of days ago, and the H7N9 was actually today. Some of the information on the internet is a little bit confusing and somewhat alarming, and therefore I thought a clarification was useful to explain what these two viruses are and why there can be the confusion. I mean, the confusion comes because they share a serotype with another virus. The A to the N refer to the hemagglutinin of the neuraminidase on the surface of influenza, and they're numbered based on serotypes, how closely related they are to each other, and there are, you know, about 16 H's. There's really, I think, 17 or 18 now. Some are just found in bats, and the recent ones are relatively rare. I mean, the numbers keep going up. Essentially, these are serotypes based upon cross-reactivity in ferrets, and they essentially take a new virus and see which of the antibodies that ferrets made reacts with it. If they get a virus that none of the known serotypes the antibodies, none of them match, it gets a new number, so the number is creeping up. The ones that are most well known are really 16 H's and 9 N's, and so there's 144 different combinations. But even though the serotype reduces the number of possibilities pretty dramatically from 144 to 1. The fact that two viruses have the same serotype doesn't really mean that they have, that they share a lot of the characteristics, especially because these two different serotypes have kind of evolved somewhat separately geographically. There's Asian or Eurasian, depends on the individual serotype. Some are at least were exclusively found in Asia. Others are found in Europe and Asia, mostly due to migratory birds, which can easily travel from Asia to Europe on a regular, every season. And then the other difference is that the viruses have evolved in these highly pathogenic. Most of the high pathogenicity is first found in Asia, in fact, in China, and then that'll spread to adjacent countries. And then there was a dramatic geographic expansion with the H5N1 in 2005, and as a result, there's a lot of concern about the virus in Asia, and even within Asia, there's concern about different versions of the virus. And part of that has to do with whether a given serotype has caused human disease. The H5N1 is the serotype that's most well known, but that virus started reassorting. The virus has 8 different segments, and so two viruses entering the same host can create a reassortant, which has got some genes from one and some from the other, and can actually call for the new serotype. So the H5N1 that was originally identified in Fujian province, and sometimes it's called the Fujian strain, it was originally clade 2.3, and then as it evolves and branches off, the name stays the same, but gets longer. So the two main ones that evolved from 2.3 were 2.32 and 2.34, and then they divided those up another round. So the virus of the H5 that's been doing all this reassortment is now up to 2.3.4.4, and that's been found in multiple serotypes. And like I said, originally it was H5N1. In China, there's been H5N1 and 2 and 3 and 5 and 6 and 8 and 9. So there's quite a few combinations, all of which have the same H5. They all have this high-path Fujian H5. And H5N8 has had the largest geographic spread, but since H5N8 has not been identified in a human case, that's almost always cited when the virus flies into a new area. And even though it's got the same H5 as the H5N1, and then several years ago, there was that H5, when paired up with N6, produced human cases. And so there's a lot of concern about H5N1 and H5N6. And in those cases, they actually do have the same name relative to the H5. They're all this Fujian variant, which is now 2.3.4.4. But you can have different ends, and the ends are kind of picked up from wild birds that are local, and that was best demonstrated back in 2014-2015 season when one of the H5N8s, a version that was initially found in a crane in Japan. And like I say, even within these groupings where they have the same serotype and they have the same H5, phylogenetic analysis allows them to be divided up even further within that group. And back in 2014, there were actually three different H5N8s. One of them had caused an outbreak in South Korea in early 2014, and then that virus flew to Europe as H5N8, and there weren't that many cases, but it was the first time H5N8 had been in Europe, and that caused some concerns. And then there was another version that kind of stayed in Japan, and then there was a third version which really made all the news because it flew to Taiwan and to the United States. And that particular version had one change in the receptor binding domain, which was avian, and that may have played a role in as being so devastating to poultry flocks. But it decimated mostly ducks and geese in Taiwan, but then kind of expanded into chickens. And in the United States, it really didn't do that much damage in the fall of 2014 or the winter of 2015. But in the spring of 2015, flew up in the Midwest heading back north and ended up devastating both the turkey population in Minnesota, which is the number one turkey producer in the United States, as well as the layer hens, the chickens that lay eggs in Iowa. And Iowa is the number one egg producer in the United States. And so both of those industries got decimated. It was actually in H5N2. And the viruses in North America really gave the best example of this reassortment, because it was this H5N8 that was related to the crane in Japan that flew over to North America. And then there was reassortment with North American wild birds, and it's easy to distinguish between North America and Asia. And those reassortments generated two different serotypes in the United States. One was H5N1. And again, this wasn't the same as the H5N1 in Asia. The H5 part was, but the N1 was really from North American lineage. And that virus had a couple other internal genes that were also North American. So that virus had you know, a combination of both Asian genes and North American genes. And the same thing happened with the H5N2. Again, the N2 was North American lineage, as well as a couple additional internal genes. So that, again, was a mixture. In both cases, they had the same H5 as the H5N8 that was also found in North America. So there were three different serotypes. All three had the same H5, and all three were actually related to that crane in Japan. And frankly, the same thing happened in Taiwan. Taiwan ended up with three different serotypes also. There was H5N8 as well as H5N2 and H5N3. And the H5N2 in Taiwan was different than the H5N2 in North America, because the N2 as well as other internal genes came from Asian wild birds, and the same thing happened with the N3. So in those cases, they all had the same H5, and it wasn't even just a general H5. It was the H5 that was closest to this crane in Japan, but they had three different serotypes in each country. And in each case, if it was an H5N8, the N was N1 or N2 in North America, and they were North American N1s and N2s, and they were N2 or N3 in Taiwan, and they were Asian N2 and N3. So it kind of showed that the virus can change fairly dramatically. The serotype can change, and in the case of Asian coming to North America, it kind of resulted in a hybrid kind of a virus where half of the genes were from North America and half, it wasn't quite half, it was like 5 and 3. And actually one of them might have been 4 and 4. But it was a contribution from each location. And so without actually knowing the lineage, you really don't know a whole lot from just the serotype. And while we're on H5, that happened in Europe. Europe, as I mentioned, in 2014, had H5N8 for the first time. These H5N8s in Europe were all related, all 18 segments were related to the H5N8 in South Korea. But then this year, or in 2016, there was a massive outbreak of H5N8 in Europe, and that same virus spread from Europe to the Middle East and into Africa and Northeast Africa, in Tunisia and Egypt, and then all the way to West Africa, where it went to Nigeria and Cameroon and Niger. And so all of those had H5N8 that was kind of this new version of H5N8. It was kind of like the one from 2014, but it had different constellations, and it was actually first had an effect at Qinghai Lake in China in the spring of 2016, and that actually wasn't reported. It was identified really when the sequences started to be made public. After that outbreak, there was the same virus killed off waterfowl at Wu Spike, which is mostly in Mongolia, but goes into Siberia. They were actually found in Siberia. And that was kind of a precursor for the virus that ended up in Europe. So the initial description of the virus in Europe was that it came from Wu's Lake, but in reality, it really came from Qinghai Lake that then went to Wu's Lake. So Qinghai Lake, it was present prior to Wu's Lake, but reported well after Wu's Lake and the outbreak in Europe. It was reported quite late, but the collection dates indicated that it was really collected in May of 2014. And so then, because of this high level of H5N8, new serotypes started to show up in Europe. The first one was H5N5, and again, it was the same scenario where it had the same H5 as an H5N8, but it had a different N5 from wild birds. And then recently in Greece, it was H5N6, and based upon the fact that this year most of the H5N6 had been limited to Asia, it had been seen in China, but then it started showing up in South Korea and Japan. And so it caused major outbreaks, especially in South Korea, but it was pretty well limited to those two countries other than China. And that had not showed up anywhere else. And so when H5N6 showed up in Greece, it was highly likely that that was going to be just another reassortment of the H5N8. And that was confirmed in a ProMed post a couple of days ago, where Ian Brown from Weybridge had written in and said that they had looked at the H5N6 from Greece. And the preliminary analysis was this indeed was a derivative from the H5N8. It had the same H5. But the N6 was wild birds and was not the same N6 that was originally in China and then subsequently in South Korea and Japan. So even though there's a H5N6 in Greece, and even though the H5 is the same Fujian high path, the N6 is really different, and so far, this is the only place in Europe that the N6 has been reported. So serotype-wise, there's been H5N8, H5N5, and H5N6. All of them have the same H5. And there's additional reassortment that's been ongoing even within the H5N8. And so there's at least two different versions of H5N8 in Europe, and then there's actually two other versions of H5N8 in India. So again, they all have the same H5. They actually have the same N8, but they have different internal genes from other wild birds. So the reassortment is fairly common. And even though there was some initial concern that the H5N6 in Greece might be the same H5N6 that was originally found in China and has caused human cases and deaths in China, and then the devastation in South Korea and the wild bird outbreaks in Japan with a few farms. It's not the same H5N6. That was one of the confusing bits of data that could get missed in the headline saying H5N6 has been identified in Greece. And there's reports of these massive outbreaks of H5N6, particularly in South Korea and poultry, and H5N6 human cases in China. And so it's a different H5N6, even though the H5 is high path and it's really the Fujian strain. So that's the difference for the H5N6. The H7N9 is totally different. If the H7N9 in Asia first made headlines in 2013, it has a number of changes that have been identified previously in gain-of-function studies with H5N1 on changes that are associated with the virus being able to transmit from mammal to mammal. In that case, the ferrets were used as a host, and three different labs made changes in the virus to see if that would enhance the ability of the virus to transmit, and it did, and those were receptor binding domain changes. And one of those changes actually has been found in H7N9 in the receptor binding domain in China. And then one of the other changes was in the PB2 gene, and that change has also been found in these cases in China. So the H7N9 in China has raised a lot of concern, the low-pass version, and then recently there was a high-pass version, which doesn't have the receptor binding domain change, but it does have a polybasic cleavage site. So that's created additional concern. So there's a lot of concern about H7N9, primarily because of the human cases in China. And then earlier like over the weekend, there was a report of an H7 outbreak in Lincoln County in Tennessee. And that was concerning because it actually was high path. And the farm had a pond, and the speculation is that it was brought by wild birds. And since the outbreak was limited to one of the eight barns, and the number of birds infected there that were dying, that were symptomatic and very sick or dying, went from 100 one day to 500 the next day. And they ended up euthanizing the entire farm, which had something like 75,000 layered chickens for Tyson Foods. It's one of their contract farms. And we got a map up that almost certainly identified the farm. It was very close to the border with Alabama, and there's a constellation of farms in that area that are in southeastern Lincoln County. And it turns out that all of the, there were 30 farms nearby that were quarantined, and the reports, media reports, indicated that all 30 of them belonged to Tyson Farms. And looking on a map, it was pretty easy to identify this cluster of farms. And the media reports indicated that the infected farm had eight barns and a pond, and out of that cluster of farms, it was really only one, or at least one that I found, that did have eight barns and a pond. And so that's the one that's marked on the map. It's almost certainly the one that had the infection. And then today it was just announced, it was originally announced as high path 8-7, then it was announced it was 8-7 and 9. And, you know, that led to headlines at 8-7 and 9s in Tennessee, and some would just see the headline and think it's the same 8-7 and 9 in Asia. The report that was put up by the USDA specifically said it's not the same lineage, and in fact, when they said it was 8-7, they said the H7 was North American. Now, the update is that they've sequenced the entire virus, all 18 segments. And not only is the H7 North American, but so is the N9. And so are the other six internal genes. So essentially all 18 segments from the H7 and 9 are North American. It is high path, but it's not going to be related to the virus in China, so it's not going to have these receptor binding domain changes. It's not going to have the E627K because that's pretty well limited to human cases in China. That's generally not detected in the poultry there, and it's just in the human cases. And so the H7N9 in Tennessee is North American. It hasn't been confirmed yet in wild birds, but speculation is that it is in the wild birds. The confinement to one barn where they all have the high path or they're all symptomatic suggests that the high path may in fact be in the wild birds. And that raises concern that there may be something analogous to what happened in 2015 with H5N2. Where in the springtime the birds started migrating north and ended up infecting quite a few farms, but in particular it was turkey farms in Minnesota and layer farms in Iowa. And this is the Mississippi flyway, the same flyway that goes through those two states. And it's so far, it's only been identified on the one farm. The other 30 that have been quarantined have yet to test positive or to have any of the chickens show symptoms. And so it may be confined. Like I said, it was only in one of the eight barns on the farm. And so it might have been caught early enough, but it's also might very well be in the wild birds, and this might be the early waves. I mean, the birds generally are going to be flying in March and April. They might be a little early this year because it's been so warm, and a lot of times they follow the snow line, so they go as far north as the snow. The snow is pretty much gone in the United States, so you know, there's not much of a snow line that they're following. That they're already in Canada, but or maybe even Alaska. But the they kind of come in waves. They don't all take off at the same time, especially this year where the snow line is receding, you know, much earlier than usual. So some of the birds may be, you know, leaving a more customary seasonal time, which would be in March and April. And so there's still likely to be many birds that are still in the south that still have to migrate north. And if they have this 8, 7, and 9, there may be more outbreaks. So for right now, 8, 7, and 9 is still a concern that it's going to affect poultry. It's not the same 8, 7, and 9 in China, so that reduces at least the severity. 8, 7 does seem to have an affinity for mammals, and so 8, 7 has always been dangerous, with or without the changes that are present in China. But the most serious cases have been in China. There was an H7N7 outbreak in the Netherlands in 2003, and that did lead to a number of culls being infected, but that was largely because they were culling without goggles. But a veterinarian who was testing the birds did get infected, and he did die. And so human cases and even human deaths are not limited to the H7N9 in Asia. And this H7N7 was, you know, in Europe, it wasn't the same H7 that's in Asia. And it was high path, and unfortunately the virus that's circulating in Tennessee, or at least in one farm in Tennessee, is also high path. And now there's a high path version in China. Previously, the outbreaks actually were by a low path. So the pathogenicity refers to the effects on experimental chickens. So the low path did not kill the chicken, experimental chickens, and in fact didn't really do much to the poultry. So it was kind of spreading silently. The high path does have that advantage in that, you know, the reason it was identified as early as it was identified in Lincoln County, Tennessee, was because the birds did start to die. And so if it's high path, it does cause symptoms and the chickens, and leads to the death in chickens, and it progresses fairly rapidly. And so it doesn't spread as silently as it does in China. But high path H7 is not a good virus, regardless of what the lineage is. But the lineage in this case is known. All 18 segments in North America is not the same as H7 and 9. But that's not to say that it can't cause significant damage in poultry, especially just being transmitted by wild birds. And it also doesn't indicate that it can't infect humans, because there have been many H7 cases in humans, although most of the cases outside of China have been conjunctivitis or mild flu symptoms. It's China where there's a dramatic fatality rate, which is around 30% or so, and it may be actually higher than that in the high path, H7 and 9. There haven't been enough cases yet to get much of a hard number, but the initial numbers are not encouraging, because the cases are dead or in critical condition, other than one case did recover. But that case didn't have the E67K, whereas the ones that died or in critical condition did. And so that E67K is fairly common in the severe cases in China. That's not expected to be present in Tennessee. And even if there are human cases, it's also not likely to be present in the human cases either. So that essentially sums it up. There's an H7N9 in Tennessee. It has been limited to one farm so far, and all 18 segments are North American. It's distinct from the H7N9 in China. And there's an H5N6 in Greece, but that H5N6 is just a different serotype of the H5N8. It's all over Europe. Those numbers are going up because springtime, it was predicted that the numbers would increase, and there'll be a lot of H5N8, at least poultry and wild bird infections in the upcoming month or two as the birds do head back to Siberia and Mongolia. They start heading through these countries in Europe and the Middle East and Africa, and there tends to be a spike in cases, South Asia also, spike in cases in the springtime. That's what happened in 2006. There were a lot more cases in the spring of 2006 than in 2005, and that is also what happened in the United States. There were certainly a lot more cases in the spring of H5N2. In the Midwest, actually, there were no reported cases of H5N2 in the fall. They were all in the spring, and they really devastated both of those commercial industries, the eggs in Iowa and the turkeys in Minnesota. So we'll keep our eyes open and keep updates, but the H7N9 is not China's H7N9, and the H5N6 is not China's H5N6.
Okay, well, thank you for the information. Listeners, always go to recombinomics.co for all the latest information. There are some maps up. Dr. Nyman has created the H7N9 North American map, but we'll see if that outbreak expands or if it's still limited to the one farm. Just got some information here in the last few minutes that all the farms in the area have tested negative, including Alabama. So, and I'm about to start the second round of testing on the commercial farms, so we'll see what happens with that. But as he said, the birds are flying north, so we'll see what happens. So thank you, everyone, for listening, and have a good day.